Good evening. I would like to call to order the Mountain Regional Administrative Control Board meeting. It is November 20th at 6:02. I hear we have some public input.
Yes, we have one gentleman, a Mr. Tom Daly.
Okay. Tom, would you like to speak to the board?
Tom, can you hear us? Let me chat with him and see if he can.
Okay.
Chris, what's up?
Capital M, lowercase r w, capital W, Wi-Fi.
What's our Wi-Fi password?
RW Wi-Fi 23, 22.
22.
22.
Yes.
Took me that long before
yeah, give it up. That's actually one of the guests.
Is it guest?
Yes.
I don't actually. I'm <clears throat>
Is he responding?
Nope.
Can we proceed?
I think he has time because you'll be opening the public hearing, correct, Dave? So we have a, if he wants to speak about anything on the agenda, the rate hearing or the impact fee, we'll open the public hearing for that. He can make comments then.
Okay.
That's what his comments are about.
All right. Okay. So Steve, why don't I let you proceed with the 2026 water rates and impact fee analysis presentation.
Right. There's two different presentations, Chris. If you want to just pull up the water rate one. And let's go ahead and go to the next page. So we're doing a tiered rate increase approach again this year. The base rate for our residential customers will go up 2.05%, and for commercial customers, 2.11%. And then usage rates increase as they get into higher usage tiers, the more they use each month. But they begin at 2.22 for residential and 2.67 for commercial. On the next page, you'll see,
sorry,
no, that's okay, how the tiered rate increase kicks in. Sorry about that. So as you'll see, the base starts at 2.05%, like I mentioned on the previous slide, 2.22% for the first 5,000 gallons in a month. And then it gradually increases as we go down. If a customer is using over 100,000 gallons in a month, those gallons over 100,000 would have a 15% increase. In 2025, we were charging $55 per thousand. In 2026, it would be $63.25. So again, kind of passing the costs along to those people who really push the system hard and make this do more source development and strain our system. The commercial, you'll see, follows the same pattern, starting at 2.11 and then going up to almost 14% for a commercial business that's over 100,000 gallons. As you all recall, we went through several scenarios looking at different base and usage tiers, and this seemed to be a nice mix of trying to keep the low users at a smaller bill and passing along the cost to the high users. On the next slide, this shows how that will impact our customers by group. So we'll call 39% of our customers small users. These are people without lawns, townhomes, small users, kind of like that. They see about a 2.64% increase in their bill. Then the average user would see about a 3% increase, and that's about, we'll call about 31% of our customers. The above average user, about 3.5%, 20% of our users. 8%, our large users would see an over 6% increase, and then the biggest they're only 2% of them, but almost a 10% increase for the very large user. So what that means on a monthly bill on the next slide shows what that might mean to those users. So that small user, that 30-something percent would see about a $2.75 a month charge. Obviously, that'd be higher in summer depending on usage, but over the year, it would average out about $2.75. The next, $3.63 a month for that kind of average user. And if we go all the way down to that very large user, they would see about an $85 monthly increase to their bill over the year. Again, we set these rates so that we can produce sufficient revenue for capital projects and also to meet the covenants required by the debt we have. And that's the proposed rate increase for 2026. Any questions on that one? All right. The next is about the impact fee. So the impact fee is what people who are coming onto the system have to pay when they're pulling a new building permit and want to become a customer. Our biggest project will be the expansion of the treatment plant in the near future, so that's why I've got that on that first slide. We follow the state code for how to do this, that we can impose an impact fee under the state code for the impact of new development on a current existing public infrastructure.
Really?
Both screens died. That's weird.
Well, not about an hour.
Hard run an HDMI cable.
It's got to be able to share with the people online, though, too.
Or just add to the second screen.
Yeah, which is what this should be acting as right now.
I'll just get up HDMI just in case.
Who's running the column?
Why did that drop out?
I just want to get
it. The door should be open.
Like a task force now. Yeah, we have to carry our phones everywhere. You might get locked in the kitchen or locked out in the lobby.
You're doing great so far.
So far, so good.
Just need some technology.
Yeah.
Uh-oh.
It's like we are really close to chess.
Tom, if you can hear us, we're sorry we're having some technical difficulties in our new office.
Has everyone moved in? And,
yeah. Right. We're trying hard to change the power button.
Yeah, is that on?
That makes sense.
I saw blinking
light. Why did that drop out?
Still power up above.
Yeah, it's.
It looks like the TV light's on. Is that? Yeah, okay.
I feel like this. Yeah.
If you lean close to it, you can tell it's on.
It definitely seemed like something kind of glitched or shorted. It kind of popped.
Yeah, there was like.
Both screens at the exact same time.
It's on.
Okay.
I didn't see it in there.
Yeah.
Catch it. Not good.
We believe in you, Jess. You got it.
Just in case.
Yeah, no.
Looks like Tom has left.
Going light, Sam? Do you want Nesta to try or me to try? I don't. My hands are pretty big. No, I just embrace him.
That's right. Also, this one is short.
Yeah.
Let's see if she can get her smaller eyes.
Oh. I won't yank it.
Yeah, it's tiny though. Our longer one?
Yeah.
Great job though.
It's working. We're live on Zoom.
Yes, we don't have a screen here, yeah.
So I guess we can all grab the computers.
I do have my computer.
Yeah, we could just do that.
Yeah.
Log in Zoom if needed. Although it sounds like he's getting a longer cable solved with that.
We don't know why the big machine isn't working.
It's not connecting to it. It's on.
Is there a light on?
Yeah, the green light's on. And the TV light's on.
Trust myself less around that.
Back to the server.
Well, it's good to test out all these, you know, your backup plans.
Is this the modern version of the TV card that the fifth grade teacher has?
Yes.
That's what the inspiration was, the VCR underneath of it and the whole thing.
You can't be old enough to remember that.
I remember the projector.
Yeah, I'm saying.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not talking about real people. Like the mirrored one?
Yeah. No. Like the reel-to-reel. The reel-to-reel and a disc with tape on the inside and then ran it through a big light.
Yeah.
And you could watch Herbie the Love Bug.
I think we had that. We did have the spinning
Offsets. Yep.
Whatever that thing was called. Powered off, just in the bottom right.
I watched the Yellowstone Bears like every grade growing up in elementary school or something. Because it was on one of those films we could watch, you know, on the
it was safe.
Reel to reel.
Yep. I think that's why we saw all the Herbie the Love Bug movies.
Yes.
Yeah.
Were those Disney? They were just little.
Yeah.
Yeah. Everything going down.
Do we know the Wi-Fi password?
Yes.
Is it my
capital N R W capital W I F I 22. It is switched.
Worked.
You troubleshot that on the
flies on the little hands.
I can do it. I can button you. Right. just in HDMI 1, so. Mm-hmm. Which is showing. Mm-hmm. You got it.
Oh, I got it. Okay.
Recording in progress.
Where did I?
Was it my display that went out? Oh, there we go. Just mute yourself, Karen.
Yeah.
That's great.
That's problem solvers.
Yeah. Just happen to have a huge screen in your back pocket.
Can we say?
That's good.
Good picture.
Now I just can't think. Where'd my stuff go?
Save the tape this time.
There it is.
Goodbye is not bad.
No, no, no. No revisions. I had nothing to do with.
It's like
I don't just have this headed out for a night.
Just like under the
pictures are cables.
Got him.
So the last time we had done. Welcome back. We did an IFP and IFA in 2023, but then we had several capital projects coming forward that we got new cost estimates on, so we thought it was prudent to do another one. So we completed last one in 2023 and then did this one in 2025. What we've discovered as they went through the process on the next slide.
Trying.
I know.
Is that it?
Yeah, first of all, there are two impact fee areas in our district, the general service area, or GSA, we call it, and then the promontory service area. That's a special area. They put in a lot of infrastructure. Their lease fees are handled a different way, so their impact fee is slightly different. So let's go ahead and go down to the next slide. So the impact fee is made up of five components: water rights, source production, storage, distribution, operation support. They all add in a component to what the ultimate impact fee becomes. Then.
Did it go down?
So the methodology is that if there's excess, then new people have to buy into that. And then also, then for new projects, you look at a 10-year growth window and you take the cost, how much it will grow and what the cost will be allocated over those 10 years, and that can get added into the impact fee. Okay, I keep on. So this is what the end result was. So we do our impact fee based on a 1 gallon per minute GPM on a peak day. And so the cost for one GPM for peak day in 2023 was $18,239, in 2025, $20,945. Then you see the corresponding amounts for promontory after they get credits for the things that they put in themselves. And then on the next slide, not most places, residences don't need one GPM, it factors down. So the average impact fee during 2025 has been just under $7,000. The new impact fee will have a 15 to 19% increase depending on which area you're in. So with the new impact fee, the average impact fee using 2025 as examples of what would come in would be just over $8,000, or $8,000 to $8,300. So about $1,000 more for every customer who wants to come in and join the system. And I think that's the last slide.
Yep.
So any questions on that? We've kind of gone over this before in some meetings. This is kind of just a quick summary of the methodology and why we did it and the impact to future customers to the district.
So just
If I remember, this is strictly mathematical, right? There's no judgment in this whatsoever. With maybe the exception of upcoming capital improvement projects that are just estimated rather than budgeted.
Correct. You use that's why it's kind of broken into two pieces. The engineers put together the impact fee facilities plan, so all the projects that they see on the horizon.
Right.
Once that's completed, then we handed over to Zions Public Finance to do the analysis of, okay, these projects, according to all the estimates, will come in the 10 years. These are the estimated costs. It all calculates out to a fee. So there's not a decision we make. It's just this is what the numbers tell us.
Okay. So now I guess we could open up the public rate hearing. Do we need to make a motion for that?
Motion to open up public rate hearing.
Second that.
Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay, that's unanimous. Do we have any public ratepayers that would like to comment on the new rate?
We do not. Tom has left.
Oh, Tom has left. Okay. Then
you can close the public hearing.
Yeah. Okay. So
motion to close the public hearing. Sorry, public rate hearing.
Second.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay. So now we are up to consideration and possible approval of 2026 water rates schedule. Would anyone like to make a formal motion?
Motion to move ahead with approval or recommending approval of the 2026 water rates and fee schedule.
Actually, you approve the water rates and
fee schedule. Oh, so it's not a recommendation. Okay, so motion to approve the 2026 water rates and fee schedule.
Second.
Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. That's unanimous.
And then motion for approval of the impact fee rates as discussed.
Second.
Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
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 Okay, that's also unanimous. And now we have the 2025 Water Conservation Plan presentation.
Let's do it.
Yay. Cool.
I always love it when Jeff presents. You're my
favorite.
Try and keep us on schedule for bets or motion. So I'm just going to take probably 5 to 10 minutes to try and summarize our revised 2025 conservation plan. We pulled out some key tables and figures. One of them's got kind of a bit of math behind it, so bear with me when we get to that one. But yeah, let's start it off on the next slide. So here, it's a little small, but state of Utah. And in this map, Utah has been divided into 9 different regions based on climate, elevation, and other characteristics. This was done by the Department of Water Resources, and they set a conservation goal for each of these regions. Mountain Regional falls... Oh. Well, good. We'll pause. Well, Mountain Regional falls into the Weber River Basin region. And for this specific region, the Department of Water Resources set a 2030 goal for 200 gallons per capita day, meaning gallons used per person per day. There's a little typo there. I made a mistake. It's not 230. It's supposed to be 2030 goal, 200. Mm-hmm. Apologies. However, we've decided to adopt a conservation goal that exceeds this regional goal, and that is a 5-year average gallons per capita day of 134 or lower from 2025 through 2029. The reasoning behind this 134 goal will be explained later, but just keep it in mind. There's a regional goal, and then we have a different goal. Ready for the next slide. So I thought we'd just start off with diving into source production and loss, and this is including raw water. The colors are not as vibrant here, and I apologize for that, But we'll start on the left. So on the left, you have production and demand in the units of gallons. And those lines are shown in dark blue and light blue. It's a little small. Once again, I apologize. So production's in dark blue, demand is in light blue. And then on the right axis shows loss also in gallons. And that is depicted in a reddish line, which, once again, hard to see, but red line is loss. And I've also put even smaller, it's so hard to see, I apologize, the percentages, like loss as a percentage underneath each month. And the reason I did this is I wanted to point out that while volume of loss is greater during peak production, June, July, August, you can see that red line peak, the percentages are 6% in June, 13% in July, 7% in August, and those are typically the lowest that you'll see throughout the year. So quantity of loss is higher during peak production, but percentage is relatively low. And that's just an interesting characteristic, and it can make sense that as you flow more water through the system, loss becomes a lower percentage, even if quantity goes up compared to the rest of the year.
Is there any reason that the, like, is April just a high month for loss because everyone's turning on their systems, or?
Yeah, that's a good question. I point out that this is a 2024 snapshot. And you don't necessarily see this exact pattern year by year. I'd have to go back and see what does April look like in 23 and 22. But if I recall, it doesn't follow a consistent, I mean, except for the peak production typically having the highest quantity of loss, you don't necessarily see the same patterns January, February, March, April. So I don't know if that's specific to 2024, if I could trace that discrepancy back a few years. So I don't know if I can give you any conclusions that this will happen every April, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I'd be interested to see what 2025 looked like.
Right. Yeah, and we're hoping to maybe make these sorts of graphs available to you going forwards and long term so we can have more discussion about what are the trends that we're seeing from a production standpoint. That's a good question. All right, next slide. All right. This is the big math one, bear with me. So we just talked about source production and loss, and the other half of the equation is population. And this table is going to summarize the population estimate for 2025. And the reason why there's a lot of math behind it is you have to both account for full-time residency and seasonal or short-term occupancy in a community such as ours, because we serve a large number of second homes. So as a result, if we didn't try and account for both of these, relying on traditional census-based average household size data would overestimate the year-round population. So in addressing this, we try to approach how do we quantify the number of primary residences or seasonal or short-term residences, and that's what that STR stands for, short-term rental residences. So let's talk about some assumptions. Where are we getting our numbers? Oh, no, go back to this table. Yeah, we're going to be on here for a minute. So in order to find out what is 100% of our connection counts, we can look at our billing data. And so in early 2025, our billing data showed 5,744 active residential connections. And that's where that, if you look at the connections, so like third column, 5,774. So that's our own 100%. As far as what is primary, what is seasonal or short-term rentals, we looked at parcel data. And looking at a parcel analysis, we found about 62% to be primary residences. So we just made the assumption that the rest were going to be seasonal or short-term rental residences. So that's where we're getting that 62 and that 38%. When finding those connections, you just multiply 62 by the 5,700 or 38 by the 5,700. Now we're looking at occupancy factor. It makes sense for a primary residence that you would be there 100% of the time, so you're applying this occupancy factor of 1. For seasonal or short-term rental residences, we looked at a few studies from other resort communities to see what they did, and they found that roughly 25 to 35% of the year, that's how often, or that's like what percentage of the year those residents were occupied. So we applied a 0.35 factor to our seasonal residences. Go for it.
Can I just this number has been bothering me since I read it. I feel like a seasonal residence is still going to use the same amount of outdoor water
for sure
as a full-time resident. So when I read what the 0.35 was based on, you know, it was based on how long a person was here. I don't think that takes into account the fact that the outdoor watering is going to happen, whether they're here or not.
That's an excellent point. We fully acknowledge that, yeah, you're going to have a property manager be running the outdoor irrigation. And so this is not a perfect estimate by any means. We were just trying to develop a rough, somewhat closer, rather than acknowledging that if we went an occupancy of factor for one, we know that would definitely be an overestimate. Maybe this method is a bit of an underestimate with that acknowledgement. So there's still some thought that could go into it, but we're just trying to get a little closer. But that's a really good point.
Yeah. Do you have any thoughts? It's a compromise intentionally, for sure. And you just made very astutely the best argument for the larger population number. But irrigation demands are seasonal, and all these numbers we're talking about in the conservation plan are averaged over the course of it. So that's part of it. But if we take all the residential connections and apply the household size, I think that overestimates our population on a year-round basis. If we do the opposite and we just take our primary residences, and those are primary residents based off tax code, so people are claiming that residence is their primary residence, and apply the household size, I think that's definitely too low. So those are kind of our handrails.
Yeah.
And then if we have a really big population, it makes our conservation numbers look really good. If we have a really small population, it makes them look much worse. So this is intentionally trying to find a middle ground that is representative, but kind of has a balance to have a good conservation metric to compare against the rest of the state. So it's easy to argue where you pull the slider.
Yeah.
But the 0.35, just based off everything we read, is kind of what we went with.
And I think when we had our meeting to go over the draft of this, we talked about this just enough between the three of us that my understanding here was that we're trying to hit the number of people, not necessarily the number of water users.
Lawns being watered.
Yeah.
A residential population.
It's more about disregarding the water use for a minute and just nailing down the population that you're targeting.
We have messed around with population so much, we would come up with wildly different numbers depending on where you tried to pull from. And so, and everybody working together, they kind of come up with what I think is one of the best, you know, compromises, because it's always going to be a compromise. If we use regular census data, we get something completely different. And you know, it's depending on what, like if you go to the state and ask for their data, it's completely different than if we pull from the 2020 census data. It's different. And so we were trying to find some defensible way to come up with a population that we could stand behind.
Yeah. I would be interested to see even within Mountain Regional, if we can identify it by text parcel, who's primary and who's not, is that 35% really realistic, or is it higher or lower?
Yeah, so the really good numbers in the calc, our connection count, is the term I use, that's a solid number. And we've keep seeing billing data. So we feel really good about that. The 2.9 number, household size, that comes directly from the census for Summit County specifically. That ranges from like 2.7 to 2.9, depending on how you pull the number, but that's a pretty solid number. And then I feel great about the 62.38, because that's an analysis Chris and Kane ran on parcels in our district with a structure, and then pulled that primary residence data. The occupancy factor was certainly, you could debate it a lot of different ways. That's the big assumption. And in the report, we've got like a bunch of references we listed.
Yeah, I read through the whole thing. I just, you know.
But also to your point, no matter what we say our occupancy factor, you'll still have property managers irrigating that landscape.
Well, even if somebody doesn't live here, you know, they, yeah, you've still got to water the lawn.
For sure.
Or the trees.
And they do.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we're capturing that in our source production and like the volume of water used for sure.
Yeah.
We did find that compromise here when we're trying to focus on people in the community.
Yeah. I don't want to beat a dead horse. I read through it, I felt like that was a good.
You picked on that really quickly. Very good. That's how we found the connections per group, the occupancy factor per group. You multiply that to get your effective connections per group, multiply both of those by that Summit County specific household size of 2.9. So then at the far right, you have your estimated population per group, which totals to just under 12,500. And only 2025 is shown here, but this method was applied retroactively. But I thought it would be easier to focus on 1 year's worth of math. So we can go to the next slide. And now that we've talked about both population and water use, we can compare the two over time. So this graph shows population and water use, both drinking and raw water, in two different colors. You'll see drinking water is that upper line. It's a bluish color. And then raw water is a purplish line in the bottom. Population is represented by yellow dots. And I would say big thing to take away here instead of trends is just that a variety of factors come into play here. Climate, watering restrictions, water use practices, data confidence. So I don't want to draw too many conclusions at this point, but that's the data that we have over the 2015 to 2024, so almost 10 years of data. Let's go to the next slide. So this is what I would say is like the crux of our conservation plan is mountain regional specific per capita use over time. And once again, per capita use is gallons used per person per day, or on the left you'll see it as gallons per capita day, and GPCD. And that data is represented in a bluish line that kind of bounces around at near the top of the screen. And on the right you have population, which is represented by the yellow line with the yellow dots. And the top horizontal line, which is greenish, but it's hard to tell, that would be that Utah specific 2030 regional conservation goal, that 200 gallons per capita day. And then that red line horizontal roughly in the middle of the screen, that is that 134 number I told you to keep in mind. That is the district adopted goal. And that comes from the 3-year average of our gallons per capita day. So if you shift your focus to the right side of this graph, you have those last three dots of the gallons per capita day, and that red line is the average of those three. And the reason we wanted to use this is that even though it's based on a relatively small sample size, this trend demonstrates a sustained and substantial reduction in water use. So we figured this could be a good thing to try and commit and maintain that level of efficiency as we progress and go into the future. So that's where that 134 number comes from and why we think it would be a good idea to try and use that as our goal. And then last slide. I won't go through all these, but here are the practices that we discussed in our conservation plan that have helped or will help, because some of these are future initiatives to help with conservation in the district going forward. But yeah. Any questions, comments, concerns?
This draft was also sent to the state for their review and they had no comments back. This is something that the district has to review every 5 years. So this is our 5-year update.
What are the implications if we don't hit our target?
There's no negative repercussions for falling short of the target. It's ambitious, I think. I mean, ideally, you'd like to see a nice trend falling over time. We can kind of try and keep things on track, but really when we ran the data, we saw like pretty consistent use and then a radical shift in use, 22, 23, 24. You know, which started with literal drought restrictions happening to your customers that everybody's aware of.
And different rate structure.
Yeah, shortly after that.
When you go for state revolving fund money, having a conservation plan is a requirement.
Yep. Yep. And then thought a rolling average would be more appropriate just because we're going to have so much variance year over year. So, yeah, it's an ambitious goal, but I think that's fine to have a difficult goal and come up a little short. Like, we will not hit that goal this year. Certainly. Sure. When we do the math.
Okay.
Great. All right. Well, does anyone else have any questions on the conservation plan?
So this is an action item that the board needs to adopt.
Oh, okay. Great. Then
what's the next?
Number 7.
Oh, yeah. Any further discussion?
I'll make a motion to approve the 2025 Water Conservation Plan as presented.
Second.
Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All right, great work, guys. Okay, we're on to the consent agenda. Does anyone have any changes to the meeting minutes? Does anyone have any questions on the check register?
I have a couple. EDM did that work on Old Ranch Road. What's a waterline loop?
So that's the...
Is that the bypass thing?
Yeah, it's the relocation that was created as a conflict with Summit County's drainage project and road widening along Old Ranch Road.
That was pretty cheap.
Yeah, they were amazing to work with. Honestly, they pulled out all the stops and pulled up the fire drill for us, and came up with creative solutions. And
I thought the way it was described was going to be a total nosebleed, so that was surprising.
No, they did not take advantage of the situation.
Okay. And then it looked like we bought almost 7K of lids for the meters. So
more. Right,
and what are the lids? It's just, it's poly, literally $7,000 of lids.
Yeah.
Wow. Because we have to replace the lid when we put a new meter in, or? Got it.
Or okay. It disappeared.
If it's a new build, the contractor has to put it in. But okay. Then I have to get okay.
Or if we can't read.
Yeah.
Wow.
We're still replacing them throughout the district. So the spring, summer.
It'd have to be poly because the endpoint won't send out the cell signal if it's in a metal lid. Yeah. So that's why I have to
pick. I've got the poly one though, don't I?
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. All right.
We can sell you one.
Yeah. For a mere
7,000.
Yeah. For the low price.
They're not new in, and they need them a new one, like there's broken or missing or whatever. Then we do charge it. Okay.
Cool. I saw the Summit County, $1.7 million.
So remember, we approved that a year ago.
Yeah, we're settled.
We're settled.
Congratulations.
We didn't pay him before we got a bill. So.
Well done. And then you and I already talked about the car soap. So
yes.
I'm good. I asked about the $400 of car soap. But it's in their wash bay, which is super cool. That's it for me.
Yeah. So can remind me what the EAP services are for Intermountain Health.
All the employee assistance program.
So that's
for all of our employees. It's available to employees and their dependents. If they are having a family crisis or need any kind of mental health counseling, they can call, connect with a counselor right away.
Okay. And then I feel like maybe I had some questions on the membranes, but maybe I was just putting all the math together. And
on the purchase order?
Yeah, of course. And if I could make a request, if you could turn it so that I don't have to like download it and then turn every page
I didn't realize this one didn't work. It'd been working.
It's been the past 2 months. So
okay, something has to change. I'll work on that. Sorry
about that. No worries. So we've got the 3 purchase orders. We've got the membranes. Corolla and EDM Partners.
Just to comment on the membranes, that is just for the design.
Yeah.
That contract will then shift to the general contractor. So we're only asking for that small piece of the entire package.
Right. Yeah. There was just a ton of
300 detail. Pages.
Yeah.
Or reference.
Right.
Not fully. I'm actually super appreciative that you put that on there. So it was like, we're free.
Wrote your memo.
Memo is great.
Are any of those large purchase orders, are they all within the budgets that we have for them at this point?
Yes, mainly because the treatment plant ones are part of, we are amending the budget to add more to that. And the EDM one is within the new savings we're having on old ramps that we're rolling into the new well drill.
But the Corollo contract amendment is is already taken care of.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. So does anyone have any other questions on the consent agenda?
Motion to approve the consent agenda as discussed.
Second.
Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Okay, that's unanimous. And we're back to you, Steve.
All right. Financial summary. Big surprise, we were actually under budget on revenue for a month this year. Mm-hmm. If you get into it, you'll see our position, our net position is still really strong, 6.86 million. 3.94 million better than budget. So again, a very high revenue year for us. Let's go ahead and go down a little bit. You'll see almost all of that came from water sales. That number was actually higher at the end of September because we were under budget. So, but still that's where we made all the extra money. The other revenue, as you recall, the tax direct reimbursement that Lisa facilitated is one of the big causes for the other RUAP being over budget, along with better interest earnings than we thought, because there were a lot more predicted interest rate cuts last year at this time, and that didn't take place. Okay, let's go ahead and go on down. Expenses, the key is that on the operating expenses, we're 4.2% ahead of, higher than last year, but below budget. But that's when I was doing the budget presentation last month. You kind of remember me saying, I think we've got a little more fluff in there, let's say, that we can take out. So a lot of that's been taken out rolling into the 2026 budget. So in theory, next year, both of those lines will be very similar instead of one being significantly higher than the other.
4.2.
Oh, sorry. Right here. So if you look at just our operating expenses, we're 8.2 better than budget, but 4.2 higher than last year. So going forward, my goal is to make those numbers be both about like cash. I'll just stay up here. This one.
Careful, it's a touch screen.
Oh.
Okay. He's done.
Cash, as you'll see, restricted cash went way down because we're making some of those final payments to get the building finished. So that's why it's down for the year. Overall, we're still in a really good position. When you look at the 367 days, very similar to the last year. So our actual operating reserve stayed about the same. We just changed, you know, from 40 million to 31 million because of building. All right. Connections, I am coming in the budget, I said we hit 108. We're at 118. October is really good. Well, a lot more new connection requests came in. We're at 759. On impact fees, the budget for the whole year was 600,000. So if I were to redo the budget, those numbers would both be a little higher. And Promontory is 42 lots sold compared to 18. So that's kind of the key. We kind of did hit a low, it looks like, in 2024, but we seem to be coming out of it a little bit in 2025. So keep your fingers crossed for 2026. Now, this is the interesting one. So in October, we were actually 9.3% below the four-year average. And if you look, 151 last year to 111 this year, again, wettest October on record. So we saw that in usage. For the year, we're still almost 30% higher than the four-year average. But October definitely was a step back. Let's keep going. So the blue line, which had been making an embarrassment of all the other lines, actually dropped below the purple line. So
our revenue was actually lower in October this year than it was last year. So I thought that was interesting. And if you go to the detail, you can really see the residential people, they start shutting off in October, but a lot of the time not till about the middle of October, but it really just dropped off. And also golf irrigation really dropped off. The people who really were kind of watching it shut the system down. So yeah, we hadn't seen a red number here all year. So when we did it well, $90,000. So that's kind of the summary through October. Still on pace to have a good year, revenue and expense-wise. But yeah, October did take a little step back. Any questions? Great.
And then you've also got, is it Wythia?
The Mia, who we've been working with, has actually taken a job in the private sector, left Wythia. I'm sure the government shutdown didn't help with that. We've been handed off to a new person. They're still waiting to get in a meeting with the Office of Management and Budget, OMB, and then it'll start moving forward. Her parting words is things are moving. It's not stopped. They haven't killed the program, so we're still optimistic, but we've got to just get the ball picked up with the new persons. Then the 2026 tentative budget and proposed amended budget went really smoothly last week. Is it just last week?
Yeah.
Council. With county council, minimal questions. Chris Robinson always has a couple of questions, but they're often more water-related than budget-related. But we did have to spend a bit of time on capital budget with them because we were bringing in the $38 million we might borrow into the capital budget. And he's like, well, why'd you do that? And I said, well, just for transparency. We've been talking about this loan. We might close this loan this year. And it seemed like if I didn't have it in here, you would have asked the other side of that. So where's your loan? Kind of thing. So, but that all went really well. And no problems there. So we'll go back on December 3rd. No changes to the budget.
Nice. Great.
All right.
So that kind of covers the budget as well. All right. Any other questions for Steve on budget? Okay, we're back to Sam and Jess.
Double header.
Yeah.
Can you go to the next one first, Chris?
10. No.
So I'm going to be adding the new section to our department update every month and just wanted to pull it out so it makes sense, hopefully, and people aren't caught off guard. But this kind of came from Andy's suggestion, which I think is a really good one. And it's kind of two parts, I guess.
Christian, the other image.
The new one?
The one with the colored
wall. Later, I guess, if that's all right. But the first point is, you know, I just speaking for myself, I think I could do a better job communicating the technical aspects of the district. So I'm going to make a better effort this coming year to do so and kind of have a plan how to do that. And then the second piece is we've just been talking a lot about source production and utilization and with, you know, annexations and things on the horizon. And it's a little nebulous or maybe it's hard to visualize. So what we did and just put these charts together is we took an existing report that's automated from SCADA that Chris developed where we take all of our source production from every source. On the drinking water system, there's no raw water in these figures. We could easily make a raw water one as well, but just dump all the source into one bucket and look at it on a daily basis. So this is going to make kind of the critical chart that we'll update monthly when those reports get pushed out from SCADA, and then just put in the department update for reference. And then we'll probably pull them out and discuss them, make a memo kind of like this once a year probably. So
what is the yellow line represent? Just the average?
Zoom out, just a team pickers.
What was that?
It is, the yellow line is the running annual average. The legend is cut off just because we're seeing.
Yeah.
Oh, there we go. Perfect.
So annual average source production is the yellow line. So then you can kind of visualize when we talk about peaking or peaking factor, you know, we have a peaking factor a little over 2. Mm-hmm. You know, you can visually see it in relation to the y-axis on the chart here. And then again, the green line, the noisy one, that's daily production. So that's a value from every single day in the water system. So a totalized flow from every source across the entire district added together. And then the green, yellow, and red need a little explanation. So total reliable source capacity is a term I made up.
Trademarked.
That's we take all of our groundwater, we take 80% of that to reflect that we can't, you know, magically inject 100% flow from all of our wells in the perfect spot in the district. There's just a duty factor there, it's not possible. So 80% is a good planning number, I think. And then we add the rated capacity of our surface water treatment plant. So that's a total reliable source capacity.
What's the line that separates the red and?
So we theoretically should never hit red. Like the system, we shouldn't count on the system being able to do it. Just in general.
Because the fact that single source could be down and all of a sudden, not available.
Yes. So the fact we're able to do it is great, but it's the fact that we're tapping into that 20% that should be off the table. And it's probably not a good use for a planning number. And the operational source capacity, also made up, is taking 83% of the total. And I could talk about that in a minute, but that's essentially putting in a little bit of conservatism and using that as a planning comfort. So long-term planning, I think ideally we want to stay in the green. We don't want to hit the yellow. And we should never be kind of in touch with that red line on the chart for planning purposes. So this is just when we're saying we're running the system hard, when we're saying we're running at a high source utilization, this kind of, I think, helps like clarify what we're talking about and kind of how close we are to the red line operating our sources in that district. Can you go back to that memo?
Do you need this again?
No,
that's okay. And then keep going down. Thanks, Chris. And the second chart just developed. This is monthly totals, again, not daily, so it's a lot smoother. And this is all the sources in the district. And we had to group them just because there's so many sources to kind of make this digestible. I think we found a good compromise. And starting vertically, so bottom to top, they're essentially ranked in how, like, their importance, more or less. So the blue block at the bottom is Signal Hill Water Treatment Plant. And then 15B or C. One of those two wells is our next important source. And then if you're ever curious what went into each of these sources, all the information is on the previous page, but it's kind of a lot. But for reference, that's there. And then tying this into the master plan is the last thing I'll talk about, which is the last page.
That was really valuable.
Yeah, it's nice to see.
There's a couple things that like jumped out at me that I never, like the 15C thing I didn't realize.
Yeah, we lean on the well super hard. The district will look a lot different without that well. And then this is a figure we've talked about a lot, I guess everybody, but Corey maybe, you know, during past board retreat and master planning stage of the district. And there's a lot going on in this graph, but this is our peak day drinking water projection. So again, the blue line is a demand projection. The red line is a demand projection with a 20% buffer or safety factor, a little bit of conservatism. And that's happening on the demand side. So on the chart we looked at before, we're just doing the inverse of that. 1 divided by 1.2 is 83%. So that's why we're showing 83% instead of 80% on that previous chart. Probably doesn't really matter, but that's how that math works out. The blocks that kind of run, I don't even know, horizontally, I guess. As you move up the chart, those indicate chunks of source. The groundwater source in this chart does not have that 80% duty factor applied to it, so that's a theoretical source projection. So again, we want to use the red line as a good planning number, something to aspire to. That wasn't realistic at the time of the master plan. We just weren't there
So we used a very aggressive projection, which is represented by that blue line. And those are the two figures that like make the green, yellow, and red zones in the source production chart. So hopefully that just kind of gives a snapshot on how the system's running, like globally from the source production side, just like monthly and like on a day-to-day level and in relation to our red line or speed limit, however you want to think about it.
Do you think that we're going to be at, do you really think that like it looks like in 27 or 28, we're going to be dipping into that yellow line? Are we going to have the treatment plant ready by then?
Yeah, the goals have it. So we're going to bid the project this coming year, 2026. That works at 127. And the goal is to have it online for production season 28 with the expanded capacity. We can't miss a production season with the plant, period. But
Corolla will be here in January to give us an update, but the good news is Corolla is 2 months ahead of schedule.
Right.
Yeah. A month and a half.
But, I mean, it's not unexpected, I would say, based on the projection where we are in the system. And we're going to, it's definitely possible we can end up running the system that hard again prior to the plant expansion. So it's not, it is what it is.
Part of the desire to drop it to the 134, right? Like if you can get your your personal per day per capita usage down to the 134, that helps, right? That's the best source we can come up with.
But hopefully we have other strategies that will address the peak day demand, which I don't necessarily think is flushing toilets, right?
Right. It's definitely irrigation.
Yeah.
With the additional revenue we've generated this year, we've moved that 300 GPM well production into the capital budget for 2026. So that might help smooth a little bit until the treatment plant can get up and running. Yeah. Hopefully it does produce at that. Right. So.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, these are the, it's a little outdated, the projects for the master plan, obviously. But yeah, the same concept applies. So the 300 GPM figures Steve just threw out, yeah, would be the dark blue box. So that would help us. But yeah, the big picture solution to get us more operating in the green, you know, like a more responsible long-term planning number would be expanding the treatment plan.
Why were we waiting till 2031 for the new well?
Dollars.
Oh. Budget-wise, we didn't want a capital project till then?
A little bit of budget, plus the treatment plant has changed. This was still, we were doing a phase one and a phase two. So it's kind of, phase one was going to happen fast. So if I'm out of turn or say something wrong, Sam, just let me know. But since it's one big project now, it's going to take a little longer. So then the well moved up to help buffer that in, because we'll get both the yellow and the peach color increase at the same time once the treatment plant expansion is done as one. This had it broken into two pieces.
Yeah, this is kind of an old concept when we're doing everything possible to delay capital and large capital investment in the treatment plant, essentially, and break it into two phases. The order of the source production projects is fairly arbitrary. And in the master plan and the IFFP, I guess more importantly, all the source production projects are put in one bucket and then smoothed over time. So then over that 10-year window where the impact fee is calculated, there's no big jump, you know, like certain folks in a 10-year window are penalized for being in the wrong 10-year window. So as a planning tool, it's a little arbitrary where they fall.
We also hope to get the ASR pilot going once we get approval from water rights, which seems to be a black hole.
The ASR stands for what?
It's the aquifer
storage and recovery.
Where you pump water back in.
So when you have excess, you put it in the ground and then you kind of bank it.
So. We're actively, just a little bit of a tangent, but really we're actively soliciting for pre-qualified hydrogeologists right now. Hopefully get some support on the ASR project. Next year. So, we just had question period elapse with no question.
Good.
So we should be evaluating those pretty soon. Anyways, that's the new figure. Jess has all the templates set up really nice, so we'll just get the raw data, dump it in, update the chart, and I'll attach it to the department update every month.
Great.
Then onto the capital projects. So it's kind of fun putting these together every year. We were ambitious this year, but ended up getting a lot of work done. I kind of just added all the budgets together and came up with that $5 million number. I think that's pretty inflated, especially we consider the interconnect along 224 added that I have very little management responsibility on the project. So maybe cut that in half if you really want to talk about our responsibility on managing these projects. But still, we're investing a lot in the system, being ambitious, and I think these projects reflect that. So I guess we'll try and take turns so we don't just beat you guys to death here.
Yeah. So first off, we have Matterhorn Terrace waterline replacement. And this project wrapped up a few weeks ago. Yeah, October 2025. So as a quick recap, we were replacing about 1,800 feet of 10-inch water main along Matterhorn Terrace and all of the respective laterals. And this was done to improve reliability and fire flow. We also wanted to take advantage of the fact that Summit County was doing a roadway project. So us, the county, the sewer district kind of all teamed up to let's get these utilities replaced and get the road paved nicely. And yeah, not only that, we looked at the T, oh sorry, still in this, but you can keep it on the pictures. We added a new T and valve assembly on both the bottom and then a valve at the top that will allow us to isolate parts of the system that we weren't able to before. So if something goes wrong, this is not only great for operations, but it also benefits the customers so that only the necessary people, or maybe no one, is out of water. So these pictures highlight some of the challenges that went on. It seemed pretty straightforward to replace a stretch of water line, but there's a lot of existing utilities in the ground. There is a lot of rock up there, and since we couldn't always reuse the existing trench, it was challenging, and there are some scheduled challenges associated with that. However, we did come in under budget. That final cost, if you scroll up a little bit, was about $100,000. Oh, I just meant the budget figure about that, yeah. It was a little over $100,000 underneath budget. So that was awesome. And it's great that things have been addressed before it snows. And so now we'll just wait to see how that, landscaping and minor grading does over the winter and adjust in the spring to see what happens.
Because I sent you an email. I don't know if it's possible to throw something up. I made a mistake in this PDF.
Nope, just came.
So just adding on to that, I made an error in uploading this PDF. I didn't miss a page, but it was a really good project, and we actually got some positive feedback from the HOA, sent everybody a letter. The residents were really appreciative for the most part and really good to work with.
Yeah.
But you probably don't get a whole lot, right?
Yeah.
Well, they're very complimentary of Sam and Jess, all their efforts, and Stacy.
This is the project where there was an ATV dedicated to shuttling that as needed. I mean, that sounds pretty over the top.
Yeah.
We can't take credit for that as the contractors.
Nice to still, get
attaboy
from a bunch of customers. It's usually the other way around.
Oh yeah.
Especially on these projects.
The Homeowners Association?
Do you even know you have one?
I know we have that, but I thought they were defunct.
And they can afford two different fonts.
I'm on their blacklist. I'm not allowed to move back there.
Anyways, thanks.
Yep.
Wow.
What do we got then? Oh yeah, Browns Canyon Connection. So again, this is a betterment or a partnership on Promontory's project as they make an egress to Browns Canyon. generally they only need a 8-inch water line for a lot of this alignment. We ask them to upsize to a 12 at our cost, just to kind of future-proof that system with a lot of unknowns in that area. And then beyond the new guard shack they're building to the road, that's not an upsize. They wouldn't need that water line, so we paid to put that in, or extended, if you will. So they had a big paving deadline that they hit, and all the water line is in and pressure tested, and asphalt's over the water line. And Stacy managed all the inspections on that project. They're currently building two PRV structures that are necessary to make the water system function, just because there's such a large vertical relief between the ridge line and, up and Browns Canyon out there. That's what's actively happening with the betterment project. So that's going to roll over into next year, and we'll, I don't know if I'll include in these capital project updates or just do a department update, but if there's no anticipated changes in the budget, we'll let the board know when that gets wrapped up.
So the Highway 224 interconnect involves about 24,000 feet of water transmission along the 224 corridor, and this is connecting Park City to Summit Water, and it's just supposed to help regional supply and provide a way to convey large wholesale arrangements that have been made between various entities. Our share is about 2.3 out of the almost $7 million total. And it seems like not directly managed by us, mostly by Weir Basin, Park City, and Summit Water have been overseeing this. They are, I think they're all the way drill aboard. They have all the pipe in the ground, and now they're just making their way through punch list activities, doing final flushing, testing, chlorination. So, going on. Any comments?
Use some of Chris's help on this one, but we had really three different projects in Summit Park this year. A lot of it focused on electrical. Summit Park Well 5 was fully replaced, and that's an emergency only use well in that part of the system, but it's in a strategic part of the system. It goes to tank 2 or the middle pressure zone in Summit Park. So we keep up on compliance sampling, but don't plan on using that well unless we get in a tough spot. Then on well 7, those electrical upgrades are complete as well. And we're working through the startup and operating permit process for the new chlorinator that was installed. Well 7 essentially can supply all the demands at the top of Summit Park. So in the past, most of the time, there was no chlorine residual in that part of the system. There's no issues with the water quality that mandated us to put this chlorinator in, but just for consistency and maintaining chlorine residual everywhere we possibly can, we decided to put this chlorinator in on this well. And I think everything turned out really nice. We retrofitted the existing building, and essentially all the work was done in-house by our operations team, which is pretty cool working on projects like that. Anything on Innsbruck, I guess?
Yeah, we're still hoping to get that done before the end of the year, but we'll see. It's just kind of it's taken a back burner to some other projects. The Old Ranch Road project electrical's taken a lot longer. Rocky Mountain's been painfully slow on some of the stuff. So,
but yeah, I think we're for sure over budget, running over budget on Summit Park Wall 7. But we might be able to claw some back elsewhere, so I'm not really sure where that's going to hit. But I'll provide an update as well. It's likely probably going to be a little bit over budget.
What was the Innsbruck?
So Innsbruck is the internal electrical gutting out. It's got all the electrical panels inside, the motor control stuff, SCADA. It's all
40s.
Yeah, 40 years old.
Yeah.
So yeah, we have stuff that trips in there, and it's not safe to be in the panels really. So it's just better for us to replace all of them.
Yes, please.
Yep.
Yeah, we can go to the next one.
Oh, yeah. The other thing is we don't have, both with the Summit Park Well 5 and Innsbruck, the wells that were there, we didn't have any kind of remote control over them. We had some monitoring of like building temperatures and some other things, but that was it. So now with these upgrades, we can actually start and stop the well remotely, which is something we weren't able to do before.
We've been using South Park Well 2 more frequently the last few years. I can just go back to where we're at from the source portfolio.
All right. So for the Old Ranch Booster Pump Station electrical improvements, this is building on some of the mechanical and other site improvements we did last year. This one involved a permanent generator, which we could just go to the picture and look at that as I talk. It's lovely. Great lighting. So this generator was necessary, Chris, correct me if I'm wrong, for some of the electrical upgrades that we're doing.
It's all ties together. There was no redundancy for power there, and seeing as how that feeds the entire side of the district, you know, to get water to the colony, to get water, you know, up to
Silver
Springs. Yeah, all through the upper parts of Silver Springs. Time to get redundancy for power there.
So that was, really important to such a key pump station. Some important things to know is that a lot of this work, the concrete pad, a lot of the excavation, this work was done in-house by district staff, and that created some really great cost savings. You can see that budget of, $700,000 compared to $1.2 million is quite significant. And that allows us to start procuring two new pumps to replace some of the original pumps that are in this facility. And so that will really help with efficiency and, once again, just like another improvement for such a critical pump station. So, status, like Chris said, electrical connections ongoing.
And the plan is on Monday we're going to be moving a transformer that's there and finishing the electrical connections. So it's imminent at this point.
As a side note, the lot owner that abuts this doesn't like the color of the generator, feels that it's caused his lot not to sell and has cost him some of his asking price. So we are going to screen the side that faces his lot and come around. So we're going to spend a couple $1,000s. But I told him it's not an unlimited budget and that's all we're going to do. He's free to landscape.
Like plant some trees.
He could.
You can't just paint it. Is he less subjecting to the... everything.
Yes.
It'll also help with sound, too, if there's a physical barrier there, too. This is the highest level of sound enclosure for this generator, so it's built as quiet as it can get. But having a wall there will certainly help mitigate some of that.
Then two smaller projects. We're still in the process of getting the pump on site for upgrading Lost King Pump 1. Again, that the district's kind of outgrown that pump. We never really use it. So we wanted to put in a pump that gives us some redundancy at, you know, the most critical pumping station. I wish this one was, you know, knocked out, but it's not. And I'm hoping we can still do it by the end of the year. Shouldn't be any big changes to the budget. But yeah, still waiting on some machine work to get the pump and discharge head installed.
And some electrical stuff too.
And then just a reminder, this one came off the list. So we were planning on putting a new air valve on the transmission line as an additional surge protection measure. But as we finished the model, the study, we realized we were in good shape as long as we didn't exceed this 9,500 GPM flow rate within the transmission line, which actually works out pretty well. So we've just got standard practice in place to not exceed 9,200 GPM. And it works there if we ever wanted to revisit it, but it's on the shelf for now. The $40,000 goes back on the budget there.
All right, so the Enterprise Asset Management, or EAM, implementation is going pretty well. As of earlier this month, we went from a test environment to a live, or what they call production environment, and it is being used by all departments. Kaden and I are working on continuing training staff and like configuring the site to better suit current practices and day-to-day operations. And while not perfect, we continue to make progress and find workarounds or troubleshooting some of the issues that come up. But yeah, departments have been really great working with us, and I think we're making progress towards something that can really help with the long-term planning and managing of our assets. This is just a picture from a field work day where we're shadowing some of the transmission crew on what their day-to-day operations are for a specific task. This is looking at the heat on, well, Chris, you'd probably know what you're looking at. It's like the heat off of one of the...
Yeah, it looks like a line reactor or something. It cleans the power going to the pumps.
Yeah. So stuff like that is like one of the ways that we assess the condition of our assets and are things working properly. So yeah.
But now the metrics on that will get tracked.
Yeah, and we're hoping that we can get metrics or track on that. Or like there's another one, I didn't have that picture up, but like a vibration tool that'll say like it's this vibration number, and then behind it is like a color like green, yellow, red. And those sorts of metrics can now go into, once we quantify what we want those results to do, it could like drop the condition by 5% or drop the condition by 2% or raise it by 5%. So yeah, that's exactly what this software is hoping to do, is take a lot of this field collected data and compile it in a thing that's very easy to view by a lot of people.
Wow. In theory.
And we kind of wrapped this one up earlier, just a reminder that signal alarm insulation repairs got done ahead of our treatment plant upgrade. There's a lot of failing insulation, kind of challenging spots in the plant that turned out really nicely. That one came in a little bit over budget. I think 287 over 230 with budget on 255.
But we did ask them to do more, too, right? That was, we had them do the ends, the some wall end and stuff too. So they did some additional work. It wasn't, the scope changed, so.
Awesome. Last but not least, we have the Blackhawk Well 2R rehabilitation. And just as a reminder, this well serves much of the Northridge area, which if it was daylight, I think we'd have a pretty good view of it. So just imagine it as you're looking out of these windows. But this was just to help maintain source reliability and performance. And the rehabilitation work included cleaning and a video inspection. And after looking at that video inspection, it was determined that we didn't need a new pump and motor. So came in under budget by 2/3. So it was only a third of the budget, 25 out of 75,000.
Did we miss anything on that one, Brett?
No, the brushing bay over to Lisa.
Any highlights?
No.
Is that Whittison?
No, Nickerson.
Nickerson. Was there much in the bottom?
You could only go down so far as far as the video goes. Like the casing ain't able to soon. They didn't want to go any further, but...
But did they bail off the bottom, like clean it out?
Not the bottom. They just went to the bottom of the case.
Okay.
Yeah, they were afraid to go down further.
Construction, I forget the exact number. The construction on this well is pretty funky. It's a, you know, open hole at the bottom and really deep.
Kind of primitive.
I don't know, 2,000 feet sticks my head, but I don't actually...
He's a little down this one.
How much does it make again?
100. Kind of a seasonal well.
Good thing you didn't have a cap on it.
Anyways, that's the wrap up. Sorry, that was long-winded, but we had a lot of projects this past year. Overall, you know, some things are dragging at the end of the winter, but I'm pretty happy how everything turned out.
That's a lot of work.
Yeah. Yeah, amazing. Great job this year on, you know, that's a lot of different projects. Hopefully we'll have fewer leaks in some of the press conversations. Thanks, right?
Sure.
I did. I felt Joel in the back. Wow. And
somewhere.
We have another request for an annexation on Old Ranch Road. As one happens, the next neighbor and the next neighbor. I had asked if we could do a blanket annexation, but Dave told me no. So here is another request. For an individual lot owner on Old Ranch Road, single lot. They do pay impact fees. The next one down the line.
We're already past, right?
Yeah, we've got infrastructure up two lots on that same side. Yeah. The water line's right in front of his property. So
we're just getting rid of the patchwork.
Yeah. So you guys just approved one just out of sight off the top of this page here.
Yep.
Just last month.
And that, this one, I think, came in the next day.
Yeah.
Yeah, right after. Yeah.
Do we have somebody that would like to make a motion?
Yeah, I'm good with it. Recommendation for approval of annexation of parcel PP-87-3 into the surface area of the district by Summit County Council.
Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Okay, it's unanimous. And then Lisa, you're up.
Yeah, I just have the presentation of our annual fraud risk assessment questionnaire. There is no action required by the board. This is just for informational purposes, and we just have to show the state auditor that we presented it to the board, and then we submit by June 30th the results. Steve and Andy will do, or Steve will do that. So no changes from the last 4 years that you've seen the fraud risk assessment. The format remains the same as the original 2020. The two items that we do miss on the questionnaire are the internal audit function, which we don't have, and we've talked about before in the past, largely just because we're too small of an organization. I did say in my memo this year that we did have a new auditor come in this year, so as part of their role in getting to know Mountain Regional, they go through an internal control process. So we did have another independent outside party look at our controls and come up with no recommendations. So other than we changed a small thing with the special assessments. But other than that, so it makes me feel pretty good that missing those 20 points without having a formal internal audit function, this district is okay. The second item is the audit committee. And we have decided at this time that a formal audit committee would be a good idea. So as we start to work on our policies, which are going to be happening in the first part of the year, we will add in our bylaws a section that will have not only the finance committee, which is the full board, but also I'd like a 2-3-member audit committee. So we will put that in the policies and get that in for your approval and the county's approval. And then we will be able to check that box next year. So, any questions?
Yeah, so I know that we've done this for 4 years, but if you go to the questionnaire, there was something on there about...
Was it the other document?
Yeah, I think it's the other document, where it said that we, like, it was a no to do signers have access to blank checks.
Mm-hmm.
And that there was a mitigating control, and mm-hmm. I was kind of surprised by that. I don't know why.
I think because we're just so small that Steve has access to the checks, I do, and Sharon as well. So if we needed to get in there, we could. So.
Right, but who signs the checks? You would think that
Andy and Steve are the signers.
Yeah.
So
I don't have access,
and he doesn't have access.
Right. So that makes sense. So it just seems like it would be easy to kind of close that loop by only having your signers not have access to the checks. If you've got two people that have access to the checks,
I won't make Steve. We can cut you off, Steve. I mean, we can do that.
We could make it so.
I mean, I am a signer as well. I mean, I fill in on the back end, so I am technically a signer as well. Sharon, I don't believe
she's not a signer, so I could if we added access to just Sharon,
but if something happened to her, then we don't have access. So.
Yeah.
You do also review the check register, but if you want us to submit it to someone else, we could certainly do that.
But you need two signatures on the check?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So you need a third person. You have to have a backup.
Well, we have Sharon is, and Chris is a signer. I mean, so there are multiple signers that potentially.
And I do not have access.
And he does not have access.
But only two signers don't have access to the checks.
Andy
and Chris.
Anyway, it was just something that I would have thought was a concern. Like at Promontory, like the accounting department produced the checks and then only the general manager could sign the checks, and then anything over a certain amount
had to go to Phoenix to get signed, but none of us in the county had work signers on the campus.
It's a little, yeah, just because of only having one person who's not a signer who's in the county department, let's say.
Yeah.
Makes it a little.
There's only two, well, yeah, a CFO and an accountant. So I think so. Yeah.
Three CFOs can create. The accountants keep the checks, and then you have three different signers outside of the accounting department?
Right. The accountants would do the checks, and then, you know, Andy would sign, or, you know, if you want Lisa and Andy to be the signers, then Steve and you know, the accounting department would produce the checks, and they would have them sign it. Just
makes sense to me.
I think Steve has to sign
as
the CFO and per our other policies. So he would need, and technically Andy's supposed to sign, and then it only falls to us if they're not available for any reason. So
so I guess we could just stop my access to the checks. It'd probably be the easiest, and give that access to somebody else. To just.
But if Sharon's out, I mean, you...
No, but I'm saying, like, if Chris or Lisa had access to the checks,
right,
and then they could.
Then they couldn't be a signer.
Yeah.
Well,
you should just build a matrix. There's got to be a way to do this.
Yeah, well,
doesn't seem that
we'll
hard.
Puzzle it.
It's not that I have any concern about your, you know, values or morals, but, you know, mm-hmm. This is how small companies get in trouble, you know? So.
Okay.
Turn down a promotion?
No, it's additional responsibilities.
Anything else on that?
No, that was it.
Okay. So again, that was just for informational purposes. No approvals needed. The second item on there was the 2026 meeting dates. They are all the third Thursday of the month, except for October, which we moved to the fourth Thursday, and December, which we moved to the second. October, we do that for budget reasons, so we had more time, and then the 10th just gives us more time before the holidays. So I think I just wanted to get your feedback. Are there any dates that you'd like to change? We can certainly, we don't have to make them right now. We do need to publish this. This goes on the public notice website, goes on our board page.
I do want to find a time to do a board retreat in 2026.
Okay.
It's not on there. We can add it when we meet again, but I want to come up with a date.
I didn't think about this when I reviewed those dates, but I already have a conflict, like, definitely with the January one. Are we going to have another board member?
So there is an applicant. The priority, I think, from the council right now is to get through budgets and their grammar resolution and everything. I was hoping that the interview was going to be on the December 3rd, but the tentative agenda I saw, I did not see that as an action item. It's a land planner out of Texas, Corey.
Yeah, she's lived in Park City for probably 8 years.
And I believe she just
lived in Pineburg for a while, and there in Silver Creek Village for the last four.
I can't remember what her name is.
Catherine. Yeah, we've hung in similar circles for the last 8 years. And I can't believe it took me this long to think of asking her. So.
But she is has
sounds promising.
Yeah, that's great. Okay.
So are you proposing changing January?
No, I was just going to throw that out there, that if somebody else had a conflict with that date, then we should move. If we don't have another board member to have a forum. But it sounds like we might have another board member, and I'm not hearing anybody else has an issue with that first.
No. The only date that concerns me a little bit is the 16th of April, because I'm probably heading out to Spain to pick up my daughter from semester abroad, but I think that's going to be on the 17th. So
we can go with.
I go to Spain.
You've probably already been. You really were in Spain last year.
I haven't been to Spain. No, that's on my list.
So keep January 15th. Keep it penciled, or what, you want to move it?
I'm good keeping it. Otherwise, it's got to move forward. I think that's hard.
So, yeah, because as long as Karen and Corey and Mike.
I'll be here.
Speaking of board members, your term is ending, and that will also have to happen at the beginning of next year.
It will? Yeah, so.
No, I mean.
What do I have to do to reapply?
She's got at least four more after that, right?
Yeah. But this second, or the middle four. So you should be contacted by the county. I'll send Amy an email.
Okay.
But you stay until a successor is replaced. So even if it doesn't happen right away.
Unless you move out of the district.
That's not happening.
Yeah. Okay. Any other questions on the date or Lisa?
So in that March time period, doing a board retreat?
March is good.
Is there a day of the week that works better than others?
For me, preferably a Tuesday or a Thursday.
I would be Friday. Right now. Okay. Or Monday. Actually, Monday.
Oh, Monday. I can't do Monday. Yeah, I can't do Monday. But I can make an exception.
But I can be flexible.
Yeah.
Okay. We'll throw some dates out and come back.
Okay. We just need an approval of the 2026 annual notice of scheduled meetings.
Oh, we have to approve that to send it out? Okay. Motion for approval of the district's 2026 annual notice of scheduled meetings for the administrative control.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Hey, that's unanimous. Okay, Andy?
We're here.
What's up for us?
We're here. Finally. We're in our new building.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. It looks great from the outside. It's well lit.
We've had some hiccups. AV, sewer yesterday, but it's hard to believe that 18 months ago we broke ground and here we are. We will be closing on our old office tomorrow. Karen's going to sign on behalf of the district. As of this time, we are under budget on the construction of the building. This has been a collaborative effort by, you know, the entire staff, the admin team. We spent every Wednesday for the last 18 months moving this along. Oakland's been great to work with, and they're on the hook for the next year. We have some tweaking to do on the landscaping. We had a little insurance review, but I think overall everyone's pleased with the space. So. We really appreciate the board's support in allowing us to do this. I think it's going to make a big difference. The way, if you remember, that we've designed this space is we can lock off this area. So if you have any group or organization that needs a space to meet, this is available to you to do that. So that is what I have on the building and the shop. We're actually doing pretty well on time. Our goal is not to have a meeting in December.
That would be great because our Christmas party is that day.
Yeah. So December 10th, 10 o'clock, we're going to do our official ribbon cutting. If we do, for whatever reason, have a PO or something that day that would require immediate action, I would ask if we could just convene a quick meeting to take care of that. But right now, there is nothing pressing.
Are there public notice concerns with that?
I think we still have to do a public notice, right?
If we just get
noticed that we're canceling that meeting.
Yeah, but if we do have to have it,
right,
we would just have to do that 24-hour. We will know way before that we have to do that right now.
No, we have to have a notice if three of us show up.
Only if you convene a meeting.
Oh.
That rule changed, right, Dave?
Mm-hmm.
So as you, if you come here as
last year's change,
yeah,
it's recent.
So this is not a formal meeting of the board. It's just a open house of the district.
So if I run into two people at the grocery store, I can talk to both of them.
Just
don't
convene a meeting.
Yes, don't convene a meeting and don't decide something for this.
Yeah,
you can't elude.
Right. Okay.
No malice. That's what Dave told me.
Yes.
No malice.
No malice.
In your packet, I put together some of the highlights of the things that we've been able to accomplish in the district for the first 11 months of the year. Maybe some of you look at it like we're just doing our jobs, but I really think that the staff does a great job going above and beyond and trying to be efficient in getting projects done. As Sam mentioned, you know, we take on a lot of these projects ourselves. We save the district money where we can. And so there is money in the budget. So I'm asking for approval to award $1,500 per employee as an annual bonus for 2025.
Good with that.
Do we need to make a motion for that?
Yes.
Motion to award the annual bonus per Andy's recommendation.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Thank you. Last month, I sent you out the employee survey results in our staff meeting yesterday, our general staff meeting with everybody. We did go over some of the things in that survey, and I don't know if anyone had any comments or questions on the survey results. You get what I get. It's just to give you an idea of what people feel, the good, the bad, the ugly.
So my question would be, what are you going to do with the results?
We're going to go through it in our retreat in January. We're going to have an admin retreat before.
Oh, okay.
To go through, I mean, succession planning, goals, things like that. Bring in different departments and talk about.
Because it seemed like there were like a couple of themes in there. So I mean, there's probably some things you could take as direction to communicate differently or et cetera. Yeah.
And communication has been in every survey that we've done.
Yep.
And just reminding people that communication works both ways, mm-hmm. up and down and sideways. And we just need to do a better job of it.
Or it just needs constant messaging.
Yeah. And
like you can't take it off the radar.
And I think I told you that as some of us get older and the workforce gets younger, the way we communicate is certainly different than the way they communicate.
We did have this conversation.
16-year-olds don't get their driver's licenses anymore. They typically don't leave the house. Everything they want to do, they can do on a phone. They can chat. They can watch a movie. They can order DoorDash. It's a different world where we used to pass notes in school. They don't understand how to write. They can text. So it's just trying to figure out that whole dynamic. So it's a work in progress.
You write in cursive, it would be a secret note.
It would totally be a secret
note. I can't write in cursive.
You're out.
So any other questions or comments on that? If you remember last year, when we talked about the expansion of the treatment plant, this is the last year that we are providing water to Summit Water as part of the settlement agreement with Summit Water and the water that we had previously put on the table. We decided last year with the upgrade of the treatment plant that in 2029 we'll be putting 300 acre feet on the table, 2030, 250 acre feet. Then it drops to 231, 175 and 32, 150 and 33, and 100 acre feet in 34. So that is what we had sent to Weber Basin, and we still feel comfortable. That is not all the excess water that we think we'll have with a treatment plant. There's a safety factor in there that Sam developed, but we've already shared that with Weber Basin a year ago, and we're just going to continue to do that and generate some revenue back for the district. So just leave you an update on that. And then the last part, and this is where Mike will take over, is when my contract was renewed this year, my review is supposed to be done in November. And so Mike and I met on Monday. I'll turn it over to Mike.
Yeah, it was just the three of us with the spirit of Joel.
Oh,
I have my notes from last year, and you know, he would always ask really nice open-ended questions, and you know, I have a little more focus, and it went well. And we started off, we kind of looked at the goals from 2025, which were to complete the building, to make the move to the new office and get Signal Hill basically into the zoning. So those were all, you know, really solid achievements.
Yeah.
Well, those were kind of the metrics. And then the Joel kind of questions, you know, we talked a little bit about culture, the exact same conversation we had here tonight on communication. You know, and I kind of ask, you know, the question from Joel would be, you had a magic wand, what would you fix? Right? And it was communications, find a way to, but I thought, keep it on the radar, it's just ongoing. And so then looking forward, we set some goals for 26. The number one was to get that design started for treatment by the 26th. That's construction start. It may be fall of 26 and allows for two seasons of low demand. We talked about the second was a succession plan. It sounds like that's coming up at the retreat in January. And number three was maybe some updates to the personnel policy of work hours and make some clarifications there and standardization. You know, some of this secondary stuff kind of came up tonight is the IFA update. There was sort of a test well, Atkinson, ASR. Maybe a revision to the annexation reg. And we talked about just blanket annexation of in the Old Ranch Road area, but apparently that's,
yeah, we can't do
that. And then keep following up on that strategic plan. I reached out to one of our customers and asked what would be some of your top priorities, and resiliency came up. And, you know, that strategic plan. So, all in all, I think 25 was a very good year, and I think we've got some good direction for 2026. Any questions?
No, I feel like we talked, you know, before you went to meet with him, so.
I reached out to the board. Joel, I could hear him.
Yep.
Okay.
Andy, we're glad you're our general.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Yeah. Okay. Do we have anything that we need to make a motion on for any of this?
Sure.
Oh. We've got questions on department updates.
Any
already got my questions on ASR and EAP.
I had a general, just a compliment. I like seeing photos where there's safety practices being employed, like the shoring. So I appreciate that. Thank you. Engineering side. And then, Brian, the new park well is in the parking lot?
Uh-huh.
How did I not know that?
That's right. They'll let it was out in the middle of the swamp. There's nothing there, but yeah, it's right next to the terrace.
Is it in a vault, like in the road? It looked like the truck.
It's in the bike. It's on the south end of the terraces. It's in this little corner. Huh. They built a building around it.
Okay. I was thinking based on where the truck was, it was.
That's a great show, you.
Yeah.
Some of the pipe work goes into a building that's under the bell tower.
Okay.
That's challenging when you got to work on that one.
No, yeah, it looked incredibly challenging and potentially, yeah. Like you have to
You got to get the HOA so they can trick all the people out and block it off. And
you have to close the road.
Yeah, it's a parking session.
It's to discuss my review of the COLA and
mix that.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
That's the wellhead?
Yep.
Holy shit.
And the panel is the... A few years ago, it was one of the capital projects we did. We relocated the electrical for this because we had to put in an electrical transformer here to power the panel. The controls are underneath the clock tower.
Okay.
And they had crushed a 600-foot or 500-foot conduit when they were redoing the surface in the parking lot. And so we redid the electrical and comms for everything.
Wow.
That's failed a few times, so we decided to move it.
Yep.
Wow. That's the hero status that went off without a hitch. So, well done. That's it for me.
I was happy to see that in 3 months we saved $28,288.75 on electricity with our new solar array.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah, next month I'll give you guys an annual for that because it'll be 1 year.
Yeah. Oh, sure, but now next month.
Next month, January, yeah.
Okay, so if there are no other questions on department updates, would somebody like to make a motion to go into executive session?
What are we talking about? Is that personnel, technically?
Yep.
Yeah, mm-hmm. So motion to go into executive session to discuss personnel.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
It's unanimous. Make a motion to go back into regular session.
Motion to move into a regular session.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. So I guess, would anyone like to make a motion to adjourn?
Motion to adjourn.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. And we are adjourned at 8:23. I can't believe it.